So imagine you receive a government-subsidized home. For a lot of people, it's literally the ultimate life-changing asset,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. I mean, it's a literal foundation for a better future.
Right. But what happens if life throws you a curveball and, you suddenly need to sell it?
Well, that is exactly what we are getting into.
Yeah, so today's deep dive is exploring the Western Cape government's 2014 policy on preemptive rights.
Right, which is essentially the government's right of first refusal to just take a house back.
Exactly. And it's just this brilliant window into how policymakers have to handle the very messy reality of social infrastructure.
It really is.
Because, okay, let's unpack this. Before the 2014 policy, beneficiaries were desperately selling their subsidized homes. And we're not talking about cashing out to buy a luxury car
No,
or.
not at all. People were selling these homes for a quick cash injection just to survive.
Right, to pay off crushing debts or literally put food on the table. But the problem was, by selling, they weren't actually improving their living conditions.
Yeah, they ended up exactly where they started, just with a bit of fleeting cash in hand.
Exactly. So how did the government try to stop that?
Well, to prevent that flagrant selling, they relied on Section 10A of the 1997 Housing Act.
Okay.
And this created a strict 8-year lock-in period. So if you wanted to sell your subsidized home within 8 years of getting it, you couldn't just put it on the open market.
You had to offer it back to the provincial housing department first, right?
Exactly. And here's the kicker. If they decided to take it back, they would do so without paying you a single cent.
Wait, really? Zero compensation.
Zero, nothing.
Wait, this sounds like, I don't know, it's like being granted restricted company stock, but instead of just making you wait to cash it out, the company can seize it back for $0, even if you help triple its value.
That's a really good way to put it.
Logistically, how did that even work in practice? I mean, what if someone completely trashed the house?
Right. Well,
Or conversely, what if they spent their own hard-earned money to build a beautiful extension? Does the government just absorb that massive financial mess on one end, or essentially steal that extra value on the other?
what's fascinating here is that the state attorney realized exactly this. Imagine being the person trying to untangle that mess.
Oh, man.
Do you bankrupt the state repairing a dilapidated house? Or do you get sued for seizing someone's beautiful new extension without paying them?
So they realized it was basically impossible.
Completely. Taking back these properties sounded clean on paper, but the reality was a logistical nightmare. The state just wasn't equipped for endless financial disputes over property improvements.
Let alone having the massive budget to fix up ruined homes before giving them to the next person on the waiting list.
Exactly. The law was virtually unimplementable.
So if enforcing the rule bankrupts the state and ignoring it defeats the whole purpose of the housing subsidy, how did they legally thread that needle?
Well, they needed a way out that didn't just abandon the core goal of the subsidy. And that necessity birthed the 2014 waiver policy.
Oh, here's where it gets really interesting.
Right. To create an escape hatch, the 2014 policy allows the government to officially waive its preemptive right within those first 8 years.
Meaning they can overlook the restriction, provided the sale genuinely benefits the seller.
Yes. So, like, if you need to relocate because you found a new job in another town, or you need to escape crime.
Or even if you need to register a mortgage bond to improve the dwelling itself, right?
Exactly. The government can grant you permission to sell.
But I'm assuming they don't just let you sell to the highest bidder on the open market.
No, definitely not. They had to ensure these homes weren't just swallowed up by wealthy property flippers.
Oh, okay.
So the waiver requires the new buyer to essentially look exactly like the original beneficiary on paper.
Meaning they have to be a South African citizen of legal age who has never owned fixed property before.
Precisely. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, by enforcing these rules, the government completely shifted its strategy.
From punishing sellers to keeping the property locked within the intended low-income ecosystem.
Yes, instead of threatening to seize homes for nothing, they pivoted to ensuring the asset stays where it's needed most.
It is such a masterclass in why rigid laws eventually have to adapt to human mobility and, complex economic
Yeah,
realities.
you really can't just freeze people in place for 8 years and expect life to hit the pause button.
Exactly. Policy has to account for the fact that people get new jobs, families grow, and sometimes, unfortunately, neighborhoods become unsafe. The waiver acknowledges that mobility is often a necessary part of actually improving your living conditions.
It really forces us to ask how we define a successful social program. I mean, is it just about putting a roof over someone's head, or is it about giving them a flexible asset that actually serves their changing life circumstances?
Right, and that leaves you with a rather lingering thought. Think back to that life-changing asset we talked about at the start. If a beneficiary is living in a home and desperately needs to relocate to escape a sudden spike in crime, you know, their safety is immediately on the line.
Yeah, time's of the essence there.
But under this policy, they are forced to wait until they can find a buyer who perfectly meets that strict first-time homeowner criteria.
Which could take a while.
Exactly. So does this highly protective policy ultimately end up trapping the very vulnerable people it was originally designed to help?